Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As the population continues to increase, more and more baby boomers retire, and Obamacare enrollment increases, the United States is facing a primary care doctor shortage crisis. According to the Association of the American Medical College, the U.S. will be more than 90,000 physicians short by the year 2020. By 2025, just 5 years later, we'll need 52,000 more primary care doctors. That's according to a study by the Annals of Family Medicine. Just 30% of doctors in the U.S. practice primary care, compared with most other developed countries, where the rate is around 70%. Part of the problem in the United States is that primary care doctors make about one half of what specialists make and have a much higher patient load. Many in the healthcare industry argue that it's time to change the way we think about and interact with primary care. A recent UCSF study suggests that nurses, pharmacists, and physical therapists should step in to fill the void left by primary care doctors. It advocates for the creation of physician-led patient care teams of licensed and unlicensed healthcare personnel. It also suggests that patients will need to play a larger role in their own care in the near future. So on today's Your Call, we're looking at how we got to this point and how we can move forward. Today, we're joined by Dr. Anthony Eitan, Senior Vice President for Healthy Communities at the California Endowment. That's a statewide health foundation whose mission is to expand access to affordable, quality health care for underserved individuals. Dr. Eitan served as the Alameda County Public Health Department Director and Health Officer for 7 years. He received his MD from Johns Hopkins and trained in internal and preventive medicine. And Dr. Eitan joins us from Oakland. Hi, Dr. Eitan. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Anthony Wright, Executive Director for Health Access California, a statewide healthcare consumer advocacy coalition. Health Access fights budget cuts and encourages prevention through comprehensive health reform. Anthony led California's campaigns to help pass the Affordable Care Act and stop hospitals from overcharging the uninsured. And he joins us from Sacramento. Hi, Anthony. Welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Ashley Kissinger, environmental health professional with the Esperanza Housing Corporation in South Los Angeles. They work with some of the most underserved communities in California. They serve 126,000 individuals every year. Hi, Ashley. Welcome to the show.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, Dr. Eitan, I mentioned a couple reasons why we have such a primary care shortage. Doctors make half of what specialists make and have a much higher patient load. But what's your take on this? Why are we facing a shortage right now?
Well, Rose, I've practiced primary care medicine for a number of years, and I'll tell you, it's hard work. And part of the problem we have today is that the system has become so paper-focused, and a lot of the administrative work that primary care providers have to provide is really something that leads to a high rate of burnout. Also, when I went to medical school, we were actively dissuaded from going into primary care. I remember a professor telling me that if I wanted to go into family practice, I had wasted $100,000 of a Johns Hopkins education.
Wow.
And I don't think that attitude has changed that much over the 20 or so years since I left medical school.
Well, for those of us who maybe see a doctor a couple times a year and are lucky if we get more than 10 minutes, I mean, that's what we're facing right now, and maybe some eye contact. What is it like behind the scenes? I mean, what are primary care doctors going through?
Well, I think, you know, because the pay is relatively low, and those that want to actually treat patients that have real need, like those that have either no insurance or have Medi-Cal, they have to make that up in volume. So they end up seeing 25, 30, 35 patients a day, and that's a lot of work. And it forces you to shorten the interaction that you have with the patient. It forces you to essentially, you know, basically try to minimize the amount of time that you spend on anything other than processing patients. And that leads to burnout. It's like working in a mini emergency room every day of your practice.
Why is the system set up like this? I mean, why does a primary care doctor have to see up to 30 patients a day?
Well, the bottom line is the reimbursement structure. The way it works now, for the most part, although it's changing somewhat, is that the fee-for-service system, which basically means you get paid for what you do. And if you do procedures, like most specialists do, you can bill at a much higher rate for procedures than you can for what's called cognitive care, which is basically sitting with a patient, listening to their story, and making diagnoses. And because primary care is focused more on cognitive care and less on procedures, it gets reimbursed less. And a number of different task forces have looked at this issue and tried to adjust primary care payment accordingly, but it just hasn't really adjusted it sufficiently to make up for that difference.
Anthony, what would you add to that? Why? I understand the reimbursement issue, but what else is at play here? I mean, why is the system set up this way? Because, you know, a lot of patients get really frustrated when you spend a lot of time making an appointment, maybe an hour in the waiting room, and then you only get about 10 minutes with your doctor.
Well, I think we're talking about a couple of different issues. It is true that for a patient, as much as it is a burden on the doctors, it also seems like that the patient almost seems incidental to the process. You know, the patient has to schedule an appointment, go in, and usually at inconvenience to their day and their schedule, and for this very short appointment with a doctor. I think there are lots of reasons. One of the things that we're trying to encourage, and what the Affordable Care Act tries to move to, is a more team-based approach, as was mentioned, to providing care, which might be more appropriate. You know, it's not necessarily the case that a visit with a 10-minute visit to a doctor is necessarily the best medical intervention. It might be, you know, for example, a diabetic, it might be more appropriate to have a more regular counseling session with a group of folks who are also dealing with the nutrition and lifestyle issues that are needed to maintain that condition. In terms of the issue of how many doctors there are, I think it's also important to recognize that some of it's about pay, some of it's about the interest of the doctors, and some of it's also about distribution. I mean, I think there's some research that suggests that there's not as much of a doctor shortage as there is a doctor maldistribution. There isn't a shortage in Beverly Hills, but there is in, you know, in the inner city, there is in the Central Valley, there is in places where we need to figure out ways to attract and retain medical professionals to be in those communities where there is significant need for those services.
Ashley, you're in South Los Angeles, environmental health professional with the Esperanza Housing Corporation. You work with some of the most underserved communities in California, if not the most underserved. How does this play out on the ground? I mean, what are you seeing where you work in terms of a primary care doctor shortage?
So basically, the community that we're working with, large amount of minority populations and recent immigrants, we see about more than a third of adults are uninsured. We see that approximately a quarter of all residents do not have access to any primary care physician. We see the unfortunate strategies of the residents that, you know, live in South Central Los Angeles. I've heard stories, or, you know, people have confided in me that they go to a swap meet every week to get certain antibiotics like penicillin, erythromycin. They think that, you know, they believe that antibiotics can cure almost anything. We see a lot of home remedies. We see teas, cultural remedies like egg rubbing or vapor rub. There's also a concoction of rubbing alcohol, marijuana, and the seed of an avocado that's supposed to cure arthritis. A lot of families, you know, retreat to south of the border in Mexico to get a lot of prescription drugs. I manage a pediatric asthma project. I see a lot of unmarked pills that supposedly cure asthma. I see black market inhalers that were not prescribed by physicians. But the majority of families that we work with that are uninsured or can't afford to buy into covered California say that they pray. They pray and they pray in order, you know, to have good health. Esperanza Community Housing also partners with federally qualified health centers like St. John's Well Child and Family Center, Eisner Pediatric, and UMA. so we're hoping, we're referring these patients to FQHCs, but this is the population that we're working with.
And I'm sure so much of this has to do with the fact that the people you work with are uninsured, but how do you think the shortage of primary care doctors affects them?
Oh, so basically, this is a whole supply and demand. I mean, according to the Health Resources Services Administration right now, L.A. County, I believe, is short of approximately 400 primary care physicians. Nationwide, we know that the United States lacks, you know, anywhere between 16 and 20,000 primary care physicians. So right now, you know, South Central L.A. is one of those populations that suffers from critical chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension, and they're not being seen by primary care physicians because there just aren't any. So we see a lot of chronic diseases, just getting worse without any help.
So, Dr. Iten, if we're facing a shortage right now of between 16 and 20,000 in the year 2014, the Association of American Medical Colleges estimates that we're going to face a shortage of more than 91,000 primary care doctors by the year 2020 because of the growing baby boomers retiring, the population growth, and so many people are now enrolling in the Affordable Care Act. Does that sound right to you? I mean, that's a huge jump in just 6 years.
It's a big jump, and part of it is the fact that a lot of medical students are not choosing primary care careers. Only about 20% of each year's cohort of medical school graduates plans on becoming primary care physicians. And even of those, many of them choose specialties that are primary care and then decide, because they don't like it, that they are going to subspecialize. So we're not producing a lot of primary care physicians. But I do want to go back to the point that Anthony raised about the patient-centered medical home. And that it basically is an argument that not every doctor visit requires a doctor. And I think that we've kind of gotten a little hung up on sort of the primary unit of the medical interaction being a patient and a doctor in some sort of exchange, when in reality a large percentage of doctor visits are really not things that actually require a medical doctor to participate. The doctor may have to oversee it at some level, but the actual doctor doesn't have to participate. And so there's a huge opportunity to actually redesign a healthcare delivery system, particularly the primary care system, in a way that is actually more culturally competent and gets patients the care that they actually need in a more timely fashion, and in a way that actually produces oftentimes a much greater level of satisfaction for the patient. And the quality issues aren't really significant. So there's an opportunity here to redesign the healthcare delivery system to use more frontline health professionals, to engage in a much greater degree of team-based care, so that you're not necessarily only having one doctor, but you may have a whole team inside the primary care center that's responsible for you. And I think we have an opportunity to better manage the care that's provided in California if we can actually actively experiment with some different types of design of primary care setups.
That is Dr. Anthony Iten, Senior Vice President for Healthy Communities at the California Endowment, a statewide foundation whose mission is to expand access to affordable, quality health care for underserved communities. Anthony Wright is Executive Director for Health Access California, a statewide health care consumer advocacy coalition. And Ashley Kissinger is the environmental health professional with the Esperanza Housing Corporation in South Los Angeles. They work with some of the most underserved communities in California, serving 126,000 individuals a year. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about the primary care doctor shortage crisis in the United States. Right now, we are short between 16 and 20,000 primary care doctors. By 2025, we'll need 52,000 more primary care physicians. So we'd love to hear from you. If you are a primary care doctor, what are your thoughts on this? If you went to medical school, what were your thoughts on the route you decided to take? Because only 1 in 5 students actually goes into primary care. If you work in the healthcare field, what are your thoughts on the changing landscape? Do you think that we need to change the system so we don't go straight to a doctor? Maybe we can see a nurse or another type of specialist to deal with issues. And if you'd like to talk about your experience in working with a primary care doctor, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, Anthony, can you talk a little bit more about this new model that we're starting to talk about? I'm sure a lot of people are actually taking advantage of this in many ways on their own, but what would this look like if it actually grew?
Well, again, I think the idea is that you have a primary care physician as a key contact. But if you have one of the major diseases or issues that people have, you know, asthma, diabetes, the obesity, et cetera, that is something that is probably better managed as opposed to, you know, once every several months. A meeting with a doctor at a very short time, some more regular interaction to help you manage that disease in a way that improves the life of the patient and prevents the issues that turn into hospitalizations, emergency room visits, etc. I mean, no one likes to go to the emergency room. No, I think it's also about having this team approach of making sure that if folks have multiple professionals, whether they be specialists or whether they be more like physical therapists or nurses or pharmacists or nutritionists, that they're doing in concert so that a doctor can, again, as Dr. Eichen said, provide the oversight to make sure that, you know, one drug here is not having a bad complication or conflict with another drug or another treatment there, but that it all doesn't need to be by the same person. And in fact, it's probably better if there's more touches, more interactions, but with a broader range of people with different experiences. Again, this is all in the California has always been a leader in this type of approach. We were very early in the wave of managed care that has been had much more penetration in California than in the rest of the country for several decades. And so, some of these the Affordable Care Act, calls a part of this approach the Accountable Care Organization, which is sort of another version of I think a more focused version of this effort. And so, I think that there are people who are experiencing this through their medical group and other providers right now and are getting some positive results. And the question is, how much can we bring that to scale, the positive of that, and also make sure that we have the proper oversight and regulation to make sure it doesn't become that any of the downsides don't become a problem.
Well, let's take a few calls before we go to break. Let's hear from Jenny in Prunedale. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a physician assistant nationally certified, which for 17 years, and I wondered what your guests thought of the importance of using mid-levels like nurse practitioners and PAs to be able to help the MDs, since one physician can work with multiple mid-levels, kind of spreads the physician a little bit farther. Mid-levels, our education is quite a bit less expensive. We can spend a little more time with patients. Our salary is less, and that leaves the physician to more complicated cases. Hmm.
Are you seeing, Jenny, more patients ask for this kind of care to bypass the primary care doc altogether and see someone like you?
No. The whole goal as a physician assistant or nurse practitioner is we work with physicians. So, for example, I work in a clinic with 3 mid-levels, and our physician is available to us for questions or concerns, or he sees the more complicated patients. So it's a teamwork approach, not a either-or.
Okay.
And that way, that's what mid-levels are designed for, is it is the whole team approach. And I'm wondering what your guests think about how the mid-levels and an increased use of them and getting more people into those programs would allow physicians to be spread a little bit further.
All right, thank you for calling. Dr. Iten, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the caller. I'm a big supporter of mid-levels. In fact, at the California Endowment, you know, with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, we saw an opportunity to really help the state grow its supply of both primary care but also mid-level providers, because we see that as a very useful adjunct to the primary care shortage. In fact, as I said, not every doctor visit requires a doctor. What is meant by that is that nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and other mid-level providers are oftentimes, sometimes even better than a physician to provide the kind of care that's necessary at these visits. The physicians are trained in a way to diagnose and treat disease, but not every doctor's visit is about disease. Sometimes it's about advice, sometimes it's about guidance, sometimes it's about the management of chronic conditions, and sometimes mid-levels are actually better listeners and can provide better counsel in those kinds of settings than physicians. And I'm not saying that that's always the case, I'm just saying that that's often the case because of how they were trained. The care part of their training sometimes is a little bit more in-depth than it is for physicians.
Well,
so we're actually funding the training of nurse practitioners and physician assistants and providing scholarships through the Office of Statewide Planning, OSHPED, to essentially grow the supply of both primary care physicians and mid-levels, particularly those of Latino, African-American, Southeast Asian descent who are in gross undersupply in California.
This is interesting because I like my primary care doctor, but she wasn't available for like 3 weeks. And so I decided to go with a physician's assistant. And she spent a lot more time with me. She asked me a lot of questions. She just seemed so much more relaxed. Dr. Iten, as a patient, how do you advocate for yourself and determine if that's the proper route to take? Because so many people by default think, I need to see a doctor.
Yeah, I think that's part of the challenge. It's about, you know, exposing patients to mid-levels so that they see that they get an equivalent quality of care. But they also get, you know, somebody who's trained a little bit more, again, on the care side and spends a little bit more time with the patient, gets to know the patient a little bit more. And I'm not speaking, you know, about in all cases, but I'm talking in general. Mid-levels have a training that is more focused on trying to provide kind of a level of care that physicians are not trained to do unless there's a disease or a diagnosis or something for them to actually intervene upon. So I do think that most people probably don't realize this, but when they go to see their primary care doctor, probably, you know, 30%, 40%, 50% of the time they actually are seeing a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner. Many people go through those encounters and they come out and they talk about how wonderful their doctor is, and they don't realize that it's not actually a medical doctor, but it's a PA or an NP. So I think in terms of quality from the perspective of the patient, there's virtually no difference.
Hmm.
I think if anything, people do report feeling like the physician spent more time with me, they were more interested in me, they didn't seem as rushed. So I think that, you know, all in all is a good sign for the kind of reforms we need in the primary care delivery system.
And before we go to break, you often have to go to your primary care doctor, even though you know you need to see a specialist, but that's just how the system is set up. Is there any way to get around that so you don't have to have two appointments?
Well, I think that, you know, people who design healthcare systems think that, you know, even if you think you need to see a specialist, you may not be right. And it's very costly to let the patient make those kinds of decisions because oftentimes the patient doesn't really know what they need. So I think it depends on the nature of the relationship that the patient has with their primary care provider. If the primary care provider feels the patient is relatively sophisticated and maybe just a phone call saying, look, I need to see the dermatologist and the primary care provider.
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today we're talking about the shortage of primary care doctors in the United States. And we're also talking about potential solutions and what needs to change. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. Please join today's conversation. The number to call is 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-8255. Or you can post your question or comment at yourcallradio.org. You can send us email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's the BBC's World Have Your Say.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with Dave Zirin, who is just back from Brazil, where he reported on the protests at the World Cup. His new book is called Brazil's Dance with the Devil. That's tomorrow. On Thursday, we'll talk about the relationship between whistleblowers and journalists. And Friday, we'll be joined by David K. Johnston, a reporter who focuses on everything from inequality to taxes. His latest book is called Divided. And then Monday, we will check in and have another show about the Supreme Court. We're getting a lot of decisions this week, really important ones, so we'll talk about those on Monday. Today, we are talking about the primary care doctor shortage crisis in the United States. Right now, we're facing a shortage of between 16 and 20,000 doctors. By 2025, we'll need 52,000 more doctors because of the aging population. So many baby boomers are retiring. So many more people are now insured because of the Affordable Care Act. And so we're talking today about why this is happening. What changes do we need to make to ensure that people get the care that they need? We're joined today by Dr. Anthony Eitan, Senior VP for Health Communities at the California Endowment. Anthony Wright is Executive Director for Health Access California. And Ashley Kissinger is Environmental Health Professional with the Esperanza Housing Corporation in South Los Angeles. They work with some of the most underserved communities in California, serving 126,000 individuals every year. And Ashley, I wanted to ask you, because there's so much focus on this new model where you have a team working with people, not necessarily a doctor, but a team of people working with communities, how do you think it would affect the communities that you work with? Do you think it would improve the situation that people are facing?
Well, I think teamwork is always a benefit. There is always a good thing. Actually, one of our partner FQHCs, the Yuma Clinic, the president and CEO, Dr. Felix Aguilar, actually emphasized that the future of primary care will be essentially teamwork and with what we call mid-level providers, what we were talking about previously. So I think how South Central or how South Los Angeles is dealing with the primary care physician shortage is by utilizing essentially teamwork, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and such.
All right, I've got a couple of emails. Email from Carl says, great and admirable as the work done by the guests. After the minimal impact provided by all the effort that went into the Affordable Care Act, the message seems pretty clear. That is, as the guests have touched on, more of the primary care burden is being shifted to patients themselves. Given that, it seems that maybe the best bang for the buck might be increased curriculum in things like nutrition and lifestyle, for example, in high school. Do your guests feel that that would be of any use or even possible, given the alliance between government, big ag, and the pharmaceutical industry? Dr. Eitan, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I would say that primary prevention is always, always important. It's a great investment. So trying to help people choose healthy behaviors when it comes to what they eat, how they exercise, what they know about health risks, is always a good investment. So I would encourage that. But I don't think that it's an either or. I think you have to work all the way along the spectrum. You have to try to prevent, you have to try to intervene early, and you have to try to treat. And the more of effort that we put into the front end of it, the less demand we'll have on the back end of it. And right now the demand on primary care is outstripping the supply. So we have to do multiple things to try to address this problem.
And Marie writes, as usual, it seems that to try and fix the problem, the solution will fall on the consumer. Be more of a part of your care, community-based health care with unlicensed staff. As in bacteria-filled meats, the inspections were not expected to change and make it safer for consumers. Instead of increasing salaries for primary care doctors to attract more professionals, it seems that's where the problem lies. That's why this country needs single-payer insurance, as in Europe, where doctors live comfortably and are not overworked. Dr. Iten, what do you think about that?
Well, I grew up in Canada, and I'm a big single-payer supporter. I worked on Prop 186 in California in the 90s and have always thought that that as a mechanism for providing health access to people makes a lot more sense than the private insurance market. But still, even within a single-payer system, you have to think about the nature of the delivery system itself. How does primary care get provided? And team-based care and the patient-centered medical home makes a lot of sense from both a quality perspective, a resource utilization perspective, and in terms of cultural competency, to be able to provide a level of care that's more sensitive to the needs of an increasingly diverse patient population.
Well, if reimbursements went up and primary care docs made closer to what specialists make, do you think we'd have a lot more?
Yes.
Or is that
we would definitely have a lot more. We've certainly seen that. I'm sorry, was that for me or was that for Anthony?
Yeah, go ahead, Dr. Iten. I'll get to Anthony after your comment.
Yes, I mean, in fact, under the Affordable Care Act, there's been an effort to actually rationalize some of the payment for Medi-Cal. Medi-Cal, or Medicaid as it's known outside of California, actually pays woefully less than Medicare, another government program. So under the Affordable Care Act, for 2 years, the Obama administration has actually equalized primary care payments for Medi-Cal to the Medicare rates. We've seen that primary care providers are very appreciative of that, and they see that as essentially an effort to support primary care given the influx of newly insured patients under the Affordable Care Act.
Anthony, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to add to Dr. Iten's point about that the ACA does try to put a special focus on reimbursing primary care physicians more through the Medicaid program. It only does go for 2 years, so for 2013 and 2014. The hope was that Congress could come back and extend that. That doesn't look very likely given the current gridlock in D.C., and so that is actually one of the debates that we're having in at the state level in Sacramento. There is a question about what is our level of reimbursement in the Medicaid program, which is exactly the people that Esperanza and other safety net providers are serving, with the Medicaid population. California has one of the lowest rates of reimbursement in the Medicaid program in the country. And just to give you a sense of how much lower it is than, say, Medicare, which is the program for those over 65 and other populations, the jump from the Medi-Cal or Medicaid rate in California to the Medicare rate was nationally was over a 73% jump. In California, it was over a 100% jump. So it was basically doubling the rate for primary care. However, if we value it, then that's something that should be focused on. I think that I don't think it's only money. However, I think it is also about accountability. The caller mentioned about single payer plans, but as long as we are doing this through a system of insurers, one of the things that the insurers are required to do as part of their license as a managed care plan is to provide timely access to care. And so if you as a patient are accepting a limited network of providers, they have to guarantee in return that they are providing an adequate network that can get you timely access to care when you need it and where you need it. And if they're not doing that, then they're in violation of their own license and laws. So, that's some additional accountability needs to happen, and that's something that we're working on in Sacramento is oversight over the managed care plans to make sure that they provide the networks that include enough primary care as well as specialists to serve the populations that they've signed up.
That is Anthony Wright, Executive Director for Health Access California, a statewide healthcare consumer advocacy coalition. Dr. Anthony Eitan is Senior Vice President for Healthy Communities at the California Endowment, a statewide health foundation whose mission is to expand access to affordable care for underserved communities. And Ashley Kissinger is environmental health professional with the Esperanza Housing Corporation in South LA. They work with some of the most underserved communities in California, serving 126,000 people a year. More than one-third of their clients are uninsured. And let's hear from some more callers. Thanks again for those emails. Let's go to Jessica in San Francisco. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. You know, I wanted to bring up that at $30,000 to $50,000 a year in student loans, the burden of student debt is a big factor in why med students lean towards the higher-paying specialties rather than primary care. And moreover, in private practice, they're essentially paid per service. So they're pressured to provide a great number of services in the least amount of time, which isn't really the standard of care we want from our primary care doctors.
Did you go to medical school?
My husband attended medical school.
Oh, okay. And how did he determine what path he was going down?
Well, at some point, our family life required him to withdraw from his program, and now he basically is back to a bachelor's degree with over $100,000 in debt and no way to pay it off.
Wow.
So,
well, thank you. So, Dr. Eitan, we mentioned this briefly in the show, but medical students are graduating with a lot of debt. And as you said, when you went to Johns Hopkins, you were dissuaded from going into primary care. So there's a couple of things going on. Obviously, students have finances that they have to deal with, but if the school is dissuading them, that's a problem. I mean, are any schools in the country trying to do more to tackle this issue to encourage students to go into primary care?
Yeah, in fact, first of all, the average debt load for medical students, graduating medical students in California, is about $155,000.
Wow.
And that doesn't even account for outstanding loans from their undergraduate years. So, you know, they are facing a pretty significant choice about, you know, how they're going to pay that debt load off. So there are a number of programs. California has actually got quite a few of them that are trying to encourage primary care from the outset, and they're actually offering scholarships and loan repayments to students who commit to primary care careers early in their training. And there is some evidence that works. There is some evidence that that works also with underrepresented minorities as well, who tend to practice in communities that have a greater need for primary care physicians. We also find that physicians that are trained in settings where they're exposed to both community-based health centers and or primary care settings, and they have professors and mentors that they can respect that work in those settings, those students tend to be more likely to choose primary care careers because they just get guidance along that pathway. But a lot of our medical schools still have a fair degree of disdain for primary care and practice in general. They tend to favor research, and they tend to the extent that they favor any specialties, they tend to favor those specialties that are kind of high prestige. So they encourage their students to sort of pursue those pathways, and then they expose them to doctors that operate in those basic specialties.
What role does Congress play in this? The New York Times recently had a piece looking at Congress not authorizing more Medicare subsidies to cover residencies. Can you talk about that,
yeah,
Dr. Eitan?
I can say a little bit about that. Anthony might be able to say a little bit more, but the amount that Congress funds medical training through the Medicare program, and the allocation that they've had for that purpose has been frozen for a number of years, I think probably over a decade. And so there are those that argue that Congress needs to invest more in the training of primary care physicians to create more primary care physicians. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I think that that's probably true, but I think that's only part of the solution. I think there ought to be some stronger incentives to essentially have health systems promote primary care so that they will actually increase the reimbursement rates and induce more physicians into primary care practice. I don't think that the whole burden is on Congress, but I do think that Congress does have a responsibility.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Jessica. Let's go next to Lisa in Oakland. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I want to say I really appreciate the work you're doing. I am on Medi-Cal, and it is really problematic. It's very hard to find. It has been hard to find doctors, period. And in the last year, in the last few months, both of my primary doctors from my practice that I've been seeing for the last 10 years have left and gone to Sutter, neither of which take Medi-Cal. And the same has been true with specialists. Several have gone to practice, specifically big companies like Sutter or Stanford, which, as far as I can see, are not taking Medi-Cal. Have you talked with some of these larger places like Sutter and Stanford to see what they're going to be doing in terms of Medi-Cal?
And Lisa, stay on the line. Anthony, do you know?
Again, it really does depend county by county, so I can't
Alameda County.
The question specifically, I would just simply say that, again, one of the things, most Medi-Cal patients are now in a Medi-Cal managed care plan, and it is the responsibility of that Medi-Cal managed care plan to provide an adequate network, and that has been the excuse for the Governor Brown's administration to not go with the legislature in raising Medicaid rates, fee-for-service rates, is that it's now up to the Medicaid managed care plan to provide that adequate network. Whether it specifically includes a Sutter or another hospital chain, it needs to provide enough of the medical groups and hospitals to be able to serve the population. We've had concerns in the over the years and more urgently now that those plans may not be living up to that obligation. And so one of the bills that we have actually coming up in front of Assembly Health Committee this afternoon is SB 964, so that the Department of Managed Health Care and Department of Health Care Services does much more thorough reviews of whether these plans are providing adequate networks and timely access to care. And if that means that a big chain like Sutter needs to be included, that may change, then they have to do that. But if they're accepting these patients and getting paid for these patients, then they have to live up to the other end of the bargain.
What advice would you give to Lisa and others like her who are on Medi-Cal and are losing their doctors? We did a show about this about, I don't know, six or so months ago.
I think I want to distinguish between the issue of losing a specific doctor versus having access to a doctor in a timely access. The regulations cannot and probably should not require any plan to take up any specific doctor or provider. But they should say you need to have enough doctors in a given area to serve the population you're taking on, and that's what they do. If there is an issue where you cannot get in to see a doctor or specialist within 10 business days, which is the standard that we have in California, you have the right to call the Department of Managed Health Care and submit a complaint. There's an HMO help hotline, and to get your remedy there, because that is, you have that right to get in. It doesn't mean that you have access to every doctor or any specific doctor, but you have a right to get in to see the doctor you need, where you need it, and when you need it.
Lisa, I can't imagine that, or I'm assuming this is so frustrating for you, losing three doctors in 1 month.
I don't know what reality he's living in, because that's not the reality of most of the people I know who are on Medi-Cal.
No.
For instance, the practice that I was in a practice, a great practice. I've been there for 10 years when I previously had private insurance. They only took me through Medi-Cal because they had because I had been there for 10 years. But in any case, so two of the doctors left. There's two doctors left and two nurses. You can't even get in to see the other doctors. They're so over-impacted. And the other doctors, as I said, left and went to Sutter, which is apparently buying out a lot of practices, as is Stanford. And I'm in Alameda County. You asked what county it was. In terms of finding doctors, that's just not the reality. Now I'm going out to Fremont, Concord, further out just to find a doctor. I don't know how people who are really disabled in wheelchairs are getting out there. I happen to have a car. Mm. But it's, I don't, you said you need documentation. Has anybody contacted, have any communication with people who are on Medi-Cal or any of the disabled groups? Because I can tell you my reality is not unusual. So I don't know what kind of documentation is being done. And I would like to know the number of that. You said the Department of Management has a number that you can call. I would love to know that. Because even getting coverage for things, I couldn't even get coverage for a TENS unit, a $45 TENS unit in Medi-Cal for pain. That I imagine most people who are on who are disabled have pain, or many of them. So I would love to know, and there's no appeal process except for internally within those HMOs. So I'd love to know, you said there's a Department of Management number?
Department of Managed Healthcare, and the number is 1-888-466-2219. That's for both folks on Medi-Cal, but also people with private health plans who have an issue with their HMO, and including not being able to get in to see a doctor in a timely fashion. Let me be clear. You mentioned what kind of reality I'm living in. I understand the reality on the ground. I'm simply saying that there are these rights that are in the law, and if folks complain, then that allows the regulators to do something about it. Unfortunately, most people don't know about these rights. Mm-hmm. And so again, the number is 1-888-466-2219.
All right, thank you, and we'll put that phone number on the website right after the show. Thanks for calling, Lisa, and good luck in finding a doctor. Let's go next to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann.
Hi there. I wanted to comment on a couple of things that the guests had said to confirm, and it has to do personal experience. I am very fortunate. I have Medicare due to disability, and I did get an hour with a specialist, a neurologist, who just said to me at the end of the hour, wow, I was only supposed to be talking to you for 40 minutes, it's been an hour. Whereas when I go to my primary care, I'm whisked in and out in 10, 15 minutes. The other anecdotal comment is that when I went to a specialist, because I had arthritis, so I went to an orthopedic surgeon, he was busy saying, I shouldn't be prescribing this, get it from your primary care doctor. He was busy shuffling everything off to the primary care doctor. And I thought he was the appropriate person to prescribe it. My comments or questions for Dr. Eitan in terms of solutions is that from what I'm gathering, I've worked extensively in the single-payer movement for years, that there are two proposals out there, both of which have positive and negative aspects. One is what we're in now, which is what I have, Medicare fee-for-service, for which I will say that doctors, knowing that tests are going to be covered, will willy-nilly prescribe tons of tests for me, and it's up to me to say, no, I don't want to have that CAT scan. It's a huge waste of money for the system, and the side effects are atrocious. They prescribe everything knowing that I won't have to pay out of pocket. That's the over-treatment model. But the other solution is just saying that if doctors and hospitals and care providers were on a salary, I think the negative part of that would be that it would feed into undertreatment. So it's the undertreatment overtreatment dichotomy. And I didn't know, Dr. Eitan, if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very sophisticated question and concern in the design of healthcare systems, particularly financing systems. And the trick really is to strike a balance between accountability, but not putting all the accountability on the individual physician. You want to put accountability on a group of physicians that can essentially establish quality protocols that dictate how they will use tests and prescribe treatments, and so that not all of their reimbursement is tied to how many tests they do, but some of it is. But it's spread across a group. I think that's the. At least that's the thinking in terms of how to incentivize high-quality practice without incentivizing, essentially, under-treatment.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Ruthann. I want to get final thoughts from all of you. So by the year 2020, the U.S. will need more than 90,000 – well, we'll be 90,000 physicians short by the year 2020 – we've heard about why this is happening, why we're facing a shortage, and what are some of the solutions, including the team approach. And Ashley, where you are in South Los Angeles, I mean, you say that even community clinics are not taking new patients because they're overworked. So what changes would you like to see?
Well, I have to tell you, and what Esperanza Community Housing has been extremely successful in is the community health worker model, the promotora model. what happens is that community health workers can actually work on the ground in the community, go into homes, see a side of patients that even doctors can't see. Mm. So we really look at a preventive model. For example, I manage a pediatric asthma project, so any child or, you know, less than 18 years who's ever seen in an emergency room in South Central is sent to Esperanza as a referral. Community health workers then go into the homes and look at environmental asthma triggers. As we know, asthma is a severe chronic disease, and it's a large majority of it is environmental. And we go into homes and try and manage that so that they don't land with their primary care physician or inundate the emergency room. I think right now in South Central, just with Esperanza and other community health worker organizations, we've been doing community gardens, looking at nutrition, also obesity prevention, asthma, and even working with kids with special needs. So I really believe in the community health worker model. Community health workers or promotoras are actually able to gain what we call confianza, you know, trust and loyalty with patients, and they open up because they're familiar and comfortable in their own environment.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that community, and now we know that community health workers will, under the Affordable Care Act, will be able to be reimbursed for some services, which is a huge win for community health.
Well, you're doing amazing work. We should really do a show about community health workers because they're on the front lines of all of this.
Of course.
And Anthony, 30 seconds, what is the best way to be your own best advocate given the circumstances?
Well, again, I think that, as this program points out, there are some systemic reforms, some of which the Affordable Care Act has taken some important steps forward with regard to investments in training and with regard to some more accountability and moving toward a pay-per-performance model rather than a, you know, pay-per-procedure or pay-per-patient, which is what we've had. For the individual consumer, know your rights, know your ability to get in to see the doctor that... know your rights with regard to your insurer, and when you're with the doctor, be clear that of what you need. At the same time, be open, as Dr. Eichmann says, to the fact that your best medical advice may not be from a doctor per se. It may be in other settings, and be open to that. I think people would appreciate that if they had more time, if they had more advice. You know, you don't need a computer engineer to do the electricity, wiring the electricity at your home. Sometimes you want people who specialize in what you need, and it may not be the person at the top of their license.
Anthony Wright is Executive Director for Health Access California. Dr. Anthony Eitan is Senior VP for Healthy Communities at the California Endowment. And Ashley Kissinger is the Environmental Health Professional at the Esperanza Housing Corporation in South Los Angeles. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What's fueling those protesting the World Cup? On the next Your Call, we'll talk with Dave Zirin, sports correspondent for The Nation magazine and author of the new book, Brazil's Dance with the Devil. Zirin is just back from Brazil, where he covered the protests. He reports that protesters are fighting against those who aim to bury the favelas, one World Cup, one Olympics, and one demolition at a time. So what do you think about the impact of international sports events on local communities? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.